Hello and welcome to a crossover episode of Set Lusting Bruce, Bruce Springsteen podcast, and Perfectly Good podcast, your podcast where we are counting down every John Hiatt song in alphabetical order. Sylvan Groth and I are going through John's songs, and we had reached the letter G, and we were going to discuss the song Girl on a String. And one of the things that Sylvan does is she finds covers of other musicians doing John's songs, and we talk about them as we're discussing the song. And she found Gail Davies recording, doing live A Girl on a String, and we loved the cover. In fact, we loved it so much, I went and found Gail Davies' website, reached out to her management and asked if she would join me on the podcast. They said yes, she was willing to absolutely join me. We exchanged emails, and I ended up getting a chance to talk to her. Gail was not comfortable getting on Zoom, but we were able to do recording. So this is her our interview, and I hope you enjoy it. In case you're wondering, who is Gail Davies? Well, let me explain a little bit. She is one of the most influential female producers in modern country music. She is a singer-songwriter. She is the daughter of country singer Tex Dickerson. Her brother is Ron Davies. Her son, Chris Scruggs, is the currently on tour with Marty Stewart as a member of his band. She has been cited as a role model by Susie Boggess, Kathy Mattea, Mary Chapin Carpenter, and Pim Tillis. She had numerous top 10 and top 20 Billboard hits, and she is considered by many as the first female record producer in country music. And you hear in the interview, she actually has played with a little bit of everyone, and toward the very end, she does a couple of name drops that just made me smile. She is definitely worth checking out. You can find her music on YouTube, on Spotify. She has been a Grammy nominated. She has been nominated for Americana Awards. And she is just really a badass. So without any further delay, let's get this thing started with a song from her.
Driving into town with the dark cloud above you, dialing the number who's bound to love you. Oh, honey, you turn me on. I'm a radio. I'm a country station. I'm a little bit corny. I'm a wild flower waving for you in a broadcasting tower, waving for you. And I'm sending you out this signal here. I hope you can pick it up loud and clear. And though you don't like weak women, you get bored so quick. And you don't like strong women, 'cause they're hip to your tricks. It's been when you whistle when you're loving and kind. But if you've got too many doubts, if there's no good reception for me, then tune me out. 'Cause honey, who needs a static? It hurts the head and you wind up cracking, and the day goes dismal from breakfast party to the sign of breakfast.
Hi, Jesse. Hi, Gail. How are you?
I'm pretty good.
Good. Thank you so much for spending time with me.
That's fine, yeah. How did you become a John Hyatt fan?
What's that?
How did you become a John Hyatt fan?
Back in the day, I was 1980. I started dating Linda, who I'm still married to, and she had a friend named Rick who loved Slugline. He loved that CD, loved John Hyatt. And so it's those things like I wasn't that impressed, but I thought, okay, this is good. And then so we went. And then when Riding with the King came out, that became my John Hyatt. That was the first album that really connected with me. I love that album. And then, of course, Bring the Family and everything else. And so since then, just have been a massive fan. But yeah. I started doing a Bruce Springsteen podcast. And, Gail, I had what I called John Hyatt Month, where I said, okay, I don't think enough people know who John Hyatt is, so I'm going to have guests specifically who love John Hyatt. And right. Sylvan Groth was one of the people that joined me. And Sylvan had done a fanzine of John for multiple years. And the more I talked to her, the more I just loved visiting with her. And so I said, hey, Sylvan, do you want to do a podcast? And she said, what do you mean? I'm like, there's Beatles alphabetical. There's Taylor Swift alphabetical. There's Bruce Springsteen alphabetical. There's a lot of podcasts where they go through an artist's discography in alphabetical order. Would you want to do that for John? And she's, yeah, why wouldn't I? So that's what we're doing. And we're up to G. And this week we're talking Girl on a String. And as I talk to you, we always look to find people covering songs. And we're like, I don't think we're going to find too many doing Girl on a String. And when we found yours, we were blown away. We're just like, this is such a great version. She even calls John out by name, says it's the favorite song on her album. I always like to start at the beginning. So if you don't mind, tell me where you grew up, and what kind of music was your family listening to?
I was born in Broken Bow, Oklahoma. I'm drinking wine while we talk.
That's okay. That's good.
My father was a country singer and songwriter and musician. But during the Korean War, times were tough, and a lot of Southerners moved up to the Pacific Northwest. And he went to work in the Puget Sound Naval Shipyard. And in the Seattle area, he hated it. So he went back to Texas, and my mom stayed. And she remarried, and my three brothers and I grew up in the Pacific Northwest. Now, my oldest brother, Ron Davis, you might know Ron. He wrote It Ain't Easy for David Bowie's album, Ziggy Stardust. And he was a great songwriter. He had hits by everybody, from Maria Muldaur and Steppenwolf and Joe Cocker and Long John Baldry and everybody, Dave Edmonds, everybody recorded his song. And he was associated, but not a good friend of John Hyatt's, but they knew each other.
Yeah, and I thought what was cool as I was, you know, doing a little research on you, is you coordinated a benefit CD release of different artists doing your brother's songs. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah. I had done, Webb Pierce was my favorite country singer growing up, and back in 2000 something, he was in the Hall of Fame, Country Music Hall of Fame. I thought that was a shame. I got a bunch of my friends together, and I produced an album in tribute to Webb Pierce with George Jones and Emmylou Harris and Dwight Yoakam and Crystal Gayle and Charlie Daniels and Willie Nelson all came and performed on the album. And my brother, Ronnie, said, wow, sis, he goes, hey, maybe someday you could produce an album for me, a tribute album for me. And we laughed about it, and 3 months later, he died. So I went back in the studio and produced the tribute to him. And it features John Prine and Dolly Parton and Vince Gill and just a whole plethora of fantastic artists. I was the first female record producer in country music, and I've been producing albums since 1970
8. So it's been a while, almost 50 years.
Yeah. I have several questions to ask you about that. So if I ramble, please forgive me. But why did you decide you wanted to produce? It was because you wanted control. You had a sound in your mind and the other person doing it wasn't getting it for you?
That's for sure. First of all, I started off as I was working in LA as a background singer. And a friend of mine who did Joni Mitchell's albums by the name of Henry Louis, legendary engineer and producer, took me aside one day and he said, "You've got really good instincts. You should produce albums." And I never had thought of it until that point. And so he started mentoring me, and I got to hang out with him. I got to watch Joni Mitchell recording Courtin' Spark. And then years later, I had a country hit on one of her songs, "You Turn Me On the Radio." That's how I got into producing, was through Henry. And then I moved to Nashville in 1976, and it was unheard of for an artist, and especially a female, to produce their own albums. So I was assigned a producer whom I did the album with and was very unhappy with, because he just was very disrespectfully treated me like a girl singer instead of
sure.
the artist. And the songwriter, I wrote 80% of the songs, and the other two I arranged. So I said from that point on, I will never work with anybody producing me again. And that's how I got involved in production.
Hello, Pantheon podcast listeners. Christian Swain here to tell you more about my experience with Raycon earbuds. Our family now has 3 pairs of Raycon earbuds around the house. And my wife just grabbed a pair of the Headphone Pros to replace some headphones from a company that was double the price. And yes, she loves them. Now, if you haven't pulled the trigger on a pair of Raycons, or even if you have, but you're in the market for another pair because they're just that good, well, now is the time to check them out, because they just launched their upgraded model of the best-selling everyday earbuds. With Raycon's upgraded everyday earbuds, now you also get active noise cancellation, ergonomic design, and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with 2 devices at once. New quick charge function, 3 customizable sound styles, plus awareness mode. Available in a variety of vibrant new colors to complement any and all skin tones. I even have a pair of earbuds in a cool green color. I have tried just about every earbud known to humankind, and these Raycons are fantastic. Seriously, if you've been wanting to check out Raycons, there truly is no better time. You're going to ask yourself why you didn't check them out sooner, and Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee. So what are you waiting for? Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
One of the things, as I was reading a little bit about your background, and this reminded me of John, is you had started to develop a reputation as a good songwriter, but you also wanted to be a performer, and you were, you know, they wanting to put you in that bucket, right? Oh, she's a songwriter. She's not a performer.
Bucket is a great term, Jesse, because my first hit record, which I wrote back in the 70s, was called Bucket to the South. And it went on to be a big hit for a lady named Ava Barber. And then Wilma Lee Cooper started doing it every Saturday night on the Grand Ole Opry. And then a bunch of other people recorded it. Lynn Anderson was one of my favorite versions. Colleen Peterson, a Canadian artist, and Misty Gaynor from South Pacific started using it in her Broadway show. The song was the first song I wrote that really put me on the map, so to speak.
Squeaking of the screen door and calling of the sweet voice. Grandma's back in Oklahoma cooking up something nice. Righteous, he taught the love of Jesus, all the earth
And then I did get a recording contract and started working as an artist, which I love. And by the way, getting back to John Hyatt, I met John right after he moved to town. His wife had just died, and we ran into each other at an ice cream parlor here in Nashville. I had my little boy, Chris Scruggs, who's also an artist and known musician, and he had his little girl, Lily, and we all got together and had ice cream. And that's how I met John Hyatt. I didn't really know very much about him because, like I said, he had just moved to town. But then when Pete Pendress and I produced the Wild Choir album for RCA, he and I started looking through songs, and Girl on a String came up, and I went, oh, God, that's a perfect song, because it epitomized what I had gone through as, like, being the little girl that was being dragged around town. That's how I got involved with John Hyatt.
And that, because I was going to ask you, what about that song spoke to you? When you heard it, you felt there are those universal songs where you go, that person may have written it, but he didn't know, or she didn't know, she's written it for me.
Oh, John was just, he's such a great songwriter. And he also was in tune to a female side, which I love. John Prine and Bobby Braddock wrote a song for me called Unwed Fathers. Everyone thinks I wrote it because it's so sympathetic to women, but it was actually written by two men. And I think it's really wonderful that John in Girl on the String was able to view that, this girl
yeah.
sort of being led around by the nose by some pompous boy. And I love that. I just love that. I love it when men write songs from the empathetic viewpoint of a woman's trials and tribulations.
Yeah, what in a few minutes, Sylvan and I are going to go through all the lyrics. We go through each lyric verse by verse, but is there specific, maybe a phrase or two that does speak to you, that you're especially feel like is insightful and that you always enjoyed singing?
I've recorded so many songs, I couldn't tell you which
yeah.
lyrics, because I have to, in my mind, go through them.
Sure.
But
I get
if you want to go blow by blow, we can do that.
Okay. It starts up, he's got her going up and down like a yo, and she never feels better than ever, just so-so. Like a shrunken
right.
head on a rear view mirror, she rides along in his atmosphere like furry dice or some voodoo thing. He's got that girl on a string.
Yeah, that's great, isn't it?
Yeah. This feels she's a thing. She is not his partner. This isn't
no,
her, his companion. This is just property, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
She's establishing that right from the top. She's just property.
Yeah. And then John can be so clever in his lyrics. And since they tied the knot, he keeps her in stitches. And when she ain't banged up, she's sewing his britches. Like a line between the... Go ahead.
I think it's when she ain't bound up.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's sewing his britches.
Which is true,
yeah, I
too.
Do. Yeah, it is. Yeah. And then the other line, right? Like a line between orange juice cans, she's strung out on his childish demands. Yeah,
I had to call. Go ahead. I had to call John about the line between the orange juice cans. He says two kids, little kids talking on orange juice cans that are connected by a string. Used to do that when you were a kid. Like
sure.
The line between the orange juice
yeah.
cans. She strung out on his childish demands to meet him out by the backyard swing. It's just
yeah.
so immature, is basically.
Yeah.
Anyway, what were you going to say? I'm sorry.
No. I love that. And then I'd love your thoughts on she carries his baby straddled on her hip bone, and there's another on the way. Yeah. Straddle, yeah. Just another on the way. Just wait till they get home. There is so much love, and we were not lucky enough to have Nancy on a couple weeks ago talking about Georgia Ray. And she was telling how excited her and John were about to have their daughter, because she had a son, he had a daughter, and this was the glue. This was going to be the family of five. But in many cases, and it's sad to say, another child is just another chain that binds you to a bad relationship.
That's what he was saying with him. If you're in a bad relationship and you get pregnant again, you're just digging yourself deeper in the hole. And that's the point he's trying to make. It's not the second child. It's just the old country saying barefoot pregnant and in the vocal booth is what Leland Sklar used to say when Gail Davis moved to Nashville. Women were still mm-hmm. barefoot pregnant and in the vocal booth instead of
yeah.
barefoot pregnant in the kitchen. So it's
right.
just another way to keep control of you. You can't. I wrote in a song one time, my book, my autobiography, and I wrote about with a lot of children back in the day before birth control. If you had a lot of children, mama didn't leave home. She stayed pretty close to the fire.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that he's trying to say there is she just keeps getting deeper and deeper into the darkness she gets. The more she sees that silhouette of a girl who wanted pretty things. So she's losing control of herself.
And I love that imagery of what you were before you started this. The person where you had dreams, you had goals, you had visions, and life has beaten you down. And yeah, I love that the silhouette is a beautiful choice of a word, like a shadow or the image, which makes it just absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, it's a great song. That's why we recorded it. We just
we love
John. He's just a great guy. And my son and Lily still, we did a show not long ago, a couple of years ago, to try to stop execution here in Tennessee. And Lily and I and John and my son Chris were all on the stage together. And it was so wonderful.
What did y'all sing?
Each of us sang a song that we had written.
Okay.
And I sang a song called Can He Be Saved? And is there any hope for or redemption for somebody who has done terrible things? And at least if they're in prison, even if it's without parole, they're able to learn something. But to kill them is just unconscionable.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
Last time I seen John, I think, God, that must have been 7 or 8 years ago, maybe more than that.
Yeah. So I'm going to ask you about your son. Your son makes the third generation of musicians. Brag a little bit as a mom about him.
He's just a wonderful musician. He's a really great guy. He tours with, right now he's on the road playing bass with Marty Stewart. But he's primarily a guitar player. And according to the old timers, he's the best non-pedal steel player in the world. He's a great songwriter too. He grew up around music. He grew up on the road with me, and he's still out there. In fact, I think he's somewhere in Washington, D.C. tonight. And he also, this is an interesting point, he has a show that comes on Friday night right after the Opry. It's called Friends and Neighbors with Chris Scruggs. And I believe his son is going to be singing this Friday night on that show. His son, Ben, is also 9 years old, wonderful little guitar player and singer, and I think he's doing a Buddy Holly song or maybe one of the Beatles songs. I'm not sure.
That's
awesome. Something worth tuning into. Yeah.
Yes, it is. A fourth generation. That's just amazing. I won't keep you too much longer, but I did want to, one of the things that my co-host, Sylvan, said is that when she first heard the term Americana, she said, oh my gosh, John has been doing Americana his whole career, and it just took a while for the world to catch up. I was reading your album. You did a lot of that too, right? That some of your work with the band was an early start of what we now call Americana, isn't it?
That's what I've read, some things that I thought were very interesting. One guy said that the Wild Choir was released on my label, RCA Records, as the precursor for the Americana movement. Because up until that point, there were no country rock bands being fronted by a woman, for one. The Americana thing is, it's just that we were all doing what we were doing, and they just found a term or a label to put on it so that they could market it. John is of the same vein as Randy Newman and people like that, the avant-garde, wonderful songwriters from L.A., that we were lucky enough to have moved to Nashville. I moved here in 75, 76, and I have seen so many wonderful artists from L.A. and New York come here because this is a great place to make music.
It really is, it's great. I will let you go in a few minutes, but I did want to say, if someone is not familiar with your work, where would you suggest they start at?
Oh, listen, first of all, I'm on Facebook. Everybody can find me on Facebook. I have a website. I've written an autobiography. They find out more than they could possibly want to know if they go to my website.
Is there anyone you didn't get to work with that you wish you could have or still is on your bucket list? I know you, as you told me, you're fairly retired now, but is there still someone that you wish you could have recorded with?
I think I worked with just about everybody in the business. Frank Zappa tried to get me to go on the road singing with him. I worked with Roger Miller. I've been in the studio with John Lennon. I have just been so fortunate through the years to be able to know so many wonderful artists. And, of course, my brother, to me, being the foremost of them all, Ron Davies.
Yeah.
Who would I work with? I'd love to spend some time with Paul McCartney. And who else would?
Sure, yeah.
I can't really think of anybody other than maybe Paul.
Okay, that's pretty good.
And
I don't think anyone had Roger Miller and Frank Zappa on the same bingo card. Good for you, bringing them up. That's amazing.
Yeah. I was singing in the Troubadour with a group called the Midnight Band, and Roger came in and saw me and just said, I want you to go on the road with me. And his background singer had just quit. So I said, yeah, I would do a few dates with him because I was just such a fan. And then a couple weeks later, Frank Zappa came into the Troubadour, and he saw me and tried to get me to – I went to a rehearsal with him to front the – it wasn't any longer the Mothers of Invention, but it was Zappa. He was doing a European tour and wanted me to front his band. And I went to the rehearsal just because I was curious, and he was just so much fun to be around. But then I told him I'd already committed to working with Roger Miller. So, yeah, I've had quite an eclectic involvement of people in my life, and I've had a really good life. I'm 76 years old on June 5th, and I'm going up to Seattle to play a show at a winery that seats about 80 to 100 people. So I do go out and play every once in a while, the Bluebird here in Nashville, and sometimes I did the Grand Ole Opry. Emmy Lou calls me every once in a while. You want to do the Opry with me? And we go do duet songs and hang out together. But other than that, I'm not really out there touring or anything, but I'm still having fun with the music.
I love that, and very good job. You don't even know your name dropping. You say Emily, who calls me and says, hey, do you want to sing? I love that. I end every one of my interviews with what I call the Mary question. And if you're a fan of Gail's listening to this podcast, I'll explain what that is. Jay Armstrong was an honors English teacher. And before he retired, he would give the song Thunder Road, Bruce Springsteen's song, to his students, the lyrics, and they would discuss it if it was a poem. And his point is, the song ends, "Now Mary climb in, it's a town full of losers, I'm pulling out of here to win." And so the song doesn't specifically say whether she gets in the car or not. So he asks his class their opinion. I will ask you, do you think Mary gets in the car?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And here's the thing, too. I love the fact that this teacher is reading the lyrics as though it were a poem. Because I, for many years, I taught, for about a decade, I taught the Kerrville Songwriters Workshop. And one of the things I would always tell people is, can you read your lyrics to me and will they make sense without the music? Because you can take really crappy lyrics and with a great musician make them sound really good. But can you strip the song down to the lyrics and read them as a poem and still have an impact? And I always use an example of "Across the river stands a lover too far for me to hold. And there beside him stands another, the one that he chose long ago. And even though I know he wants me and what I'm feeling I can't hide, I'll be loving him forever, but I will never cross that line."
Across the river stands a lover, too far away for me to hold. And there beside him stands another, one that he chose long ago. And even though I know he wants me, and what I'm feeling I can't hide, I'll be loving him forever, but I will never cross that line. You can never know for certain when that someone comes along. And I believe that love is something that you can feel for more than one.
And I always say, okay, you have the whole story in the first verse of what's going on here. And it's a song I wrote many years ago. And if you can read the lyrics like a poem, then you've got a song.
I think that's the perfect way to end our talk. Gail, thank you so much for your time today. You are truly a blessing, and I look forward to doing a deep dive into your music. And let's stay in touch. And if you're going to be in Dallas or Houston or Austin, let me know so that Lynn and I can go hear you and give you a hug in person.
Okay, all right. Sounds good, Jesse. Take care.
All right. Thank you. See you soon. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.
I've been looking forward to this song all night because it's my favorite one off the album, and it's written by John Hiatt, called "Girl on a Stream."
Billy's got her going up and down like a yo-yo, and she never feels better than ever, just so-so. Like a shrunken head on a rearview mirror, she rides along in his atmosphere like a furry dice or some blue.
Thank you for checking out this episode. If you enjoyed our discussion, I hope you will check out other episodes of the podcast. I've spent over 7 years talking to hundreds of music fans around the world about the power and magic of music. Please follow me on all my socials. I'm still on Twitter, aka X, as Jesse Jackson DFW. The show is at Setlusting Bruce. The show and I are both on Facebook as well. I'm a part of a few other podcasts. On Perfectly Good Podcast, me and my co-host Sylvan are talking about every John Hyatt song in alphabetical order. I am part of a few other podcasts. On Perfectly Good Podcast, me and my co-host Sylvan are talking about every John Hyatt song in alphabetical order. Both Perfectly Good Podcast and Setlisting Bruce are part of the Pantheon Podcast Network, where there are dozens of great podcasts about music. Charles and I talk all things Doctor Who on Next Stop Everywhere. I'm joined each week by Lou and Karen on Last Best Hope for Conversation as we discuss Babylon 5 and other pop culture topics. This show can be reached at setlustingbruce@gmail.com. And I would mean the world to me if you could send me feedback on any of the podcasts. Or please reach out to schedule time for you to join me on a future episode. Getting to talk to people about their love of music and their favorite musicians and other creative endeavors is a passion of mine. And I hope that the conversations bring you a little joy, a little love, and a whole lot of light.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more Fantasy Points.